Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Oh, you caught me in my warm-up. 612, Steve Cochran Show, number 1003. Busy program today. You know, in these times of national tragedies, how often do we see a local lawman step up and you go, I love that guy. Saw it in Dallas when cops were killed. And the sheriff at the time stood up and was a man's man, and that's a guy you want protecting. This is Joe Lombardo. Is it Clark County? Is that the county that Las Vegas sits in? Joe Lombardo is a very impressive guy, and he yesterday did a press conference, revealed a lot of information. We'll go to Ryan Burrow from ABC News and WGN live in Las Vegas this morning. Good morning, Ryan.
Good morning. Yeah, so you like the sheriff, Joseph Lombardo. He looks a little tired, and you can imagine why that would be the case. The last 72 hours have been a difficult one for him. But what we learned yesterday, first of all, some good news. The number of injured is down. They either double counted. Some people were brought into hospitals that weren't associated with this shooting. So it's now at 489, not the 530 that was initially suggested. But the new things that came out yesterday are the belief by the sheriff, although he didn't provide any evidence to back that maybe this Paddock guy had some help as far as getting those weapons into that hotel room. The other thing is he thought that maybe there was an escape route. There was a plan to leave and not essentially take his own life at the end of this thing.
Well, and the fact that he valet parked his car filled with ammonium nitrate and other chemicals that would be reminiscent of the Oklahoma City bombing. Mm-hmm. Makes you think he had a 1-2 idea, like he was going to leave and he was going to take the car and go do some more damage of who knows how big a nature. So what do we know about that, if anything?
Yeah, we don't know. I mean, the motive still is not completely obvious.
I mean, he wasn't farming, right? He wasn't driving around.
No, he wasn't
driving around with chemicals in his car for the good time.
No, the stockpile of weapons at various other locations as well, still trying to determine how many of those were legal, how many of them were illegal, and how he obtained all of them. It seems as though at least some of the purchases were legal, but we haven't gone through all that process. And there's a lot of stuff that the sheriff and law enforcement still keeping close to the vest as well. They've got to get more information from this girlfriend who's now back in the United States. They want to find out what she knows and how much she knows and whether there were any interactions directly involving this, about it, or just prior to it.
And that's my question to you too, Ryan. Yesterday, her lawyer released a statement saying she's fully cooperating. She knew nothing of it. He bought her a ticket to go to the Philippines to see her family, and she thought it was great, wonderful. So how much information do you think she can actually provide to them if she's saying, hey, you know what, I knew nothing about this?
Yeah, you know, they talked to her at least twice yesterday. We know that. And by the way, she is being treated not as a suspect, but as a witness. She was brought back to the United States. The FBI protected her. They didn't allow her to go in front of the cameras or anything like that when she arrived. They told her to go home, get some sleep, rest up, and then we want to have a chat with you. And it's our understanding they spoke with her at least on two separate occasions yesterday. Her attorney came out, spoke, saying she is cooperating fully, saying that this is not the Stephen Paddock she knew. She called him loving and caring. Said that part of that money, that one transaction that we've found that seems so weird, the $100,000 to the Philippines, was so that she could purchase a home for her family. It was the first time back to the Philippines in several years for her, and he found a cheap flight and told her to go. Now, was that a way to kind of get her out of the country and get her away from this? That's a possibility. We don't know at this point, but there is kind of that strange coincidence that she sent away about 2 weeks before this thing happens.
It is very hard to believe that somebody could be this crazy, this brutal, and this much of a monster, and the person closest to you wouldn't have seen any signs or signals. Having said that, we don't know until we know, but frankly, we may never know. But it's really, it frankly would have to be a kind of crazy we've never heard of that somebody could do this kind of damage and not put out any signals to anyone and would do this without any known motive. There's got to be more information coming.
And very well planned out, keep in mind, too. Yeah. Obviously, with the amount of weapons that were there, the setting up of cameras, using a baby monitor to be able to determine when someone was coming down the hallway. By the way, and aside on that, this security guard, Jose Campos, went up to the 32nd floor unarmed. He's the security guard for the hotel, for Mandalay Bay, went up there, found where the room was, and was shot, and was still giving directions to police and authorities and trying to direct people away from the room as he was bleeding. Just an incredible story. There's been a GoFundMe page set up for him. He obviously can't work right now as a result of the gunshot wound. He told ABC News he was just doing his job. It's amazing to sit back and think that a guy essentially armed with a walkie-talkie was part of what took down this man,
right,
who had killed dozens at that point.
Ryan, obviously hindsight's going to be 20/20 now, but yesterday the sheriff confirming that Paddock had also rented a room at the Ogden condo building last month overlooking an even larger Vegas music event, the Life is Beautiful Festival.
Featuring Chance the Rapper.
Yes, and there was also a report this morning from TMZ, again unconfirmed, that he may have booked a hotel overlooking Lollapalooza. TMZ,
yeah,
reporting.
And one of the things that the sheriff is looking at, and he's not giving us a lot of information, is was he doing some kind of recon? Was he scouting these out? Was this dry runs? Were these perhaps opportunities he took and decided to back off from? They're not releasing that information. Perhaps they don't know at this point. But yeah, it was just a couple weeks prior, that Chance the Rapper and Lord performance, and it was interesting because it was a rented condo unit from Airbnb at the Ogden. So not necessarily a hotel room, and not necessarily tracked the same way, but they do have information that he was there. This TMZ report, I don't have any confirmation on that. We'll see in the days to come, if anything unfolds out of that.
There's a computer screen of the reservation screen showing a Stephen Paddock registered back in July at the Blackstone. But Stephen Paddock is not that unusual a name. And we don't know. Look, we don't know. And everybody's trying to figure out. This is the problem we all have, right? We're trying to apply common sense and logic to the most lunatic behavior that we couldn't even imagine prior to this. What's the significance that we know, if any, at this point of the trigger here? All this weapons buildup, 30 weapons purchased in a year, more than 30 weapons purchased in a year. There's got to be some clues to that.
Yeah, some red flags, maybe. These appear to have been bought, not all at one place at one time. So that may have been a way that he was able to elude any kind of curiosity or questions about it. We don't have a ton of information on that. And hopefully we'll find out a little more. Once again, though, I mean, there are a lot of situations, not illegal to do what he did to the guns with the bump stock and everything like that. Not illegal to purchase these guns. It's kind of hard to know what it was he was going to do with them. But you would think that a purchase of a lot of these weapons in a small amount of time would alert someone. I don't know if anyone was tipped off at this point, and that's something the FBI as well as the sheriff is trying to figure out right now.
Obviously, you want to know if there's somebody still out there who was assisting him in any way. But you also need to know, for the point of closure, on how anybody could be this angry, this twisted, this maniacal. So lots of work for you to do, Ryan, and we appreciate the time.
All right, take care.
Thank you. Ryan Burrow live in Las Vegas for WGN. It's 6:20, so this TMZ story, which broke in the last few hours, again, for people trying to wrap their head around that, shows a Stephen Paddock.
Yeah.
On the registration screen.
At the Blackstone Hotel, right across the street from Lala at Michigan and Balbo.
Do they reference that it could be any Stephen Paddock?
They do, yeah. They say that this is a screenshot of what appears to be a reservation of him checking in, or rather not him checking in, but setting up the reservation, 723 and 727. Lala was August 1st through the 3rd. He was supposed to arrive on the 1st and then changed it to and leave on the 3rd. But TMZ sources saying that he never showed up.
He had
made the reservation, but hadn't showed.
Two rooms were reserved, and the story says that Paddock specifically requested that both rooms be a view room, which only faced Grant Park, where the concert was obviously being held.
Yeah, again, so this according to TMZ. No official confirmation.
Would it surprise us at all then if there was something else? And I mean, there are tons of festivals around big cities all over the summer. Don't be surprised if you hear about something in Dallas or something in wherever.
Yeah, absolutely. And yesterday, Sheriff Lombardo did confirm that we just said with Ryan that he did rent a room at this Ogden condo building the previous month for the Life is Beautiful festival.
Yeah, that's one
so
of the
I don't know
that Lombardo
if this
was about.
Supposed to be not a dry run, but check.
And that was a bigger
out.
Festival.
Yeah, that was a bigger one. Yeah.
Everybody wants the same thing. You want to know why? What was the point of this? You know, the girlfriend. Look, I know she's not a suspect. She has to know something. She has to. You can't. How can you live with somebody day after day and not see a change in behavior or things that happened that weren't the usual pattern of behavior?
Okay, but say, playing devil's advocate, say she had. Does she call the police? Does she call the FBI?
No, I'm saying now to fill in the gaps.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant beforehand if she thought something was going to happen.
Well, that's the big problem. That's the big problem. You know, if you got a family member that's going down a dark road, when do you alert the authorities, and what could the authorities do with anybody over the age of 21?
Right.
And also, how scared are you of what might happen to you if you do something?
There's that, sure.
Right.
Yeah. All right. We'll do the top six at six in a second. Let's do traffic. Mary.
Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel. It's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Get your kicks. Get your kicks.
With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60-Minute Man.
Here's your top six. President Trump met with victims of the Las Vegas attack yesterday, read a lot of stuff off the teleprompter, and was much more presidential. Did what he had to do and did not make things worse as he did in Puerto Rico the day before. So, you know, you feel like you're telling a kid, hey, you tied your shoes. Good for you. Because it shouldn't be hard. But we're always surprised when things go well. And things went just fine yesterday. So good for him. Next. White House asked Congress to approve $29 billion in additional hurricane relief and debt forgiveness, seeking to help Puerto Rico and other areas as well. Meanwhile, we've got a tropical depression that will soon be a tropical storm known as Nate that could be another hurricane. It is scheduled, or I should say, its early tracking and its early computer models say in the Gulf it could make landfall somewhere between New Orleans and the panhandle of Florida. Late Saturday night, early Sunday morning. Ask me where I'm going to be late Saturday night, early Sunday morning.
Where are you going to be late Saturday night, early Sunday morning, Steve?
Birmingham, Alabama.
What?
Why?
What?
I'm playing golf with some friends down there this weekend.
Oh, you're doing that trail?
A little bit, but we're playing several courses. But I don't think we're going to be playing on Sunday based on this forecast.
Mm.
So, Nate, you suck.
Mm.
So if I call you Sunday morning and I'm in a rental car running for Atlanta, you'll know why.
You can file a live report.
Next. This is a terrible story. Three special operators, American forces, and five other soldiers that were being trained by our special operators were killed last night in an ambush in Niger. It's northern Africa on the coast of Mali, where we know the North African franchise of Al-Qaeda exists. You also have Boko Haram there. Nobody's taking credit for the murders yet, the ambush, the assassinations. But we lose three special forces members last night in Africa. And that story breaking, and it's crushing. It's ridiculous. Next. Secretary, and we're going to take this up with Chuck Todd. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson did something yesterday that I've never seen. He basically held a press conference to say, no, he really does like the president, and he does respect the president, and he's not quitting. You don't need to add a lot to that, but Chuck Todd will try to explain it to me before my head explodes. Next. Far South Side Alderman Anthony Beal. Anthony!
That's your friend.
Anthony Beal from the 9th chairs the City Council Transportation Committee. Said he hopes the mayor will revisit the idea of higher fees and tougher regulations on the rideshare industry as part of budget talks for 2018. Anthony Beal said the city should consider raising the $5 per pickup additional fee rideshare companies pay when they collect riders at McCormick Place or Navy Pier or O'Hare or Midway. Doing so would allow Rahm Emanuel to raise revenue without resorting to politically toxic across-the-board hikes like a property tax increase. I think this is a fabulous idea.
I do, too, and at first I didn't because I thought this is ridiculous. But you're going to pay this in a cab, or you're going to pay the extra fees or the surcharges. Uber, Lyft, you know, we've been getting away with it for a couple of years now. It's been great, but if we can prevent a property tax increase as a city resident...
But getting away with it is exactly right. You know, look, they're entitled to do business the way they do business to the best of their ability. But it is ridiculous. It is, and it always will be, that somebody spends hundreds of thousands of dollars getting a yellow cab medallion.
Right.
And some chucklehead with a Toyota can come by and pick you up and doesn't pay a dime.
Right, right. We've been fortunate for about 2 years, maybe a lot.
Exploiting the system. O.J. Simpson's golfing in Nevada. And then a bonus item, which is the most important item of the day. The Blackhawks are back tonight. Your Chicago Blackhawks open tonight against the Pittsburgh Penguins, currently with a situation where they're holding onto our cup before we snare it back. And we have much to do with the Blackhawks this morning, including congratulating and welcoming Chris Bowden to the WGN family, and also Stan Bowman, no relation. Stan Bowman.
It's not even the same name.
I know. Bowman Bowden, who will be on talking about this team that he has put together in his hopes for the season. Top 6 at 6 brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
The Steve Cochran Show.
The Vice President has never had to persuade me to remain as Secretary of State because I have never considered leaving this post.
Could you address the main headline of this story that you called the President a moron? And if not, where do you think these reports or
I'm not going to deal with petty stuff like that. I mean, this is what I don't understand about Washington. Again, you know, I'm not from this place, but the places I come from, we don't deal with that kind of petty nonsense. And it is intended to do nothing but divide people. And I'm just not going to be part of this effort to divide this administration.
I'm from Texas. We just arrest them. Somebody calls me a moron, we throw them in jail. We'll get to name calling in just a second, but I want to mention our friend Chuck Todd from MTP Daily, of course, host of Meet the Press and the podcast 1947. Meet the Press now in its 147th year. We've been on 1,000 shows. So it's kind of the same thing. And Chuck was nice enough to call in about that the other day. We appreciate it. Good morning, Chuck.
Hey, good morning. How are you, Steve?
I'm all right. I don't think I've seen anything like yesterday where the sitting Secretary of State had to hold a press conference to say, no, I like him, he's fine, and I'm not quitting, and I don't talk about the fact that I call him names behind his back. I don't know what type of middle school Washington's turned into, but I don't think I like it.
Yeah, look, I am surprised he's still in his job. I don't know if he's going to remain in it much longer, or if he does, whether he's just sort of in the position in name only. He gets through his year and then he's out. The fact of the matter is, this has been an ongoing issue between Secretary of State and the White House. He's not been happy about Jared Kushner's role. He's not been happy about getting usurped, seeing staffers that he wants to appoint, getting nixed. The White House isn't happy with how slow they think the Secretary's been on appointing people. I thought Richard Haass put it well. He's been dealt a bad hand, and he played it really badly.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, like that's basically the, you know, it's like, yes, we know that this wasn't going to be an easy position to fill, but he's done a pretty poor job of trying to make it work.
I did notice that no one came to the president's defense over the moron comment. In other words, nobody stepped up and went, he's not a moron, including Melania. Anything to be made of that?
Look, I think this is a real problem. You know, the blind quote trashing of the president by people that work for him
right.
is astonishing. The Washington Post has been keeping track of these blind quotes. You know, the people that want to say, well, you have no idea the crazy stuff I stopped. You know, it's always some, you know, it's usually people trying to enhance their own reputations with sources. But I have to say, no matter what you think of the president, that kind of disloyalty is not good for the office.
Yeah, get out.
That kind of disparagement, you're not on the team, get out. And I have to say, that's why I think the president should fire Tillerson. Basically, you got to send that message. Enough is enough. You don't want to be on the train? Get up.
Now,
it's turning into a problem. They can't really, they're not really getting anything done.
Now, obviously, as you know, the flip side of this is that Mattis and McMaster and Kelly, and to a lesser extent Tillerson, are the thin, double-breasted, suited line between us and a government that's got nothing left to it. Is there some truth in that?
Well, look, I think Mattis and Kelly do want to protect that national security team in that respect. And I think they appreciate the fact that they believe Tillerson has been one of their allies. But if it's a non-functioning relationship and it starts to shake the president's confidence in Mattis and Kelly, well, then you've got bigger problems. So I know that there is this supposed pact between them and the national security team. The fact of the matter is Tillerson has not handled this well, and Tillerson has dropped the ball a handful of times, and he's been extraordinarily slow with the appointment process. I mean, the bottom line is when he leaves, it's been a lost year at the State Department.
Yeah, it's true.
Totally lost year.
Chuck, we wanted to get your response to the president's visits to both Puerto Rico and Las Vegas, the paper towel throwing incident, and what an awkward availability yesterday when they set the chairs up around the room. Did you see that, Steve? And they're asking questions.
Yeah.
Just a kind of an awkward press conference where he's saying, oh, Steve, do you have any leads?
Stage more than a revival of Cats?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, I know yesterday went better than Tuesday. Vegas went better than Puerto Rico. He stayed on script a little bit more in Vegas. This is not a strong suit. We knew it wouldn't be. We knew that during the campaign. And in these moments, I think they just hope he doesn't do cringeworthy things. I think the paper towel thing was a bit cringeworthy. I think the debt, bringing up the debt issue in Puerto Rico is cringeworthy. I think he had fewer cringeworthy moments in Vegas.
It's just amazing how far we've lowered the bar, though, right?
Well, I hear you. But this was not. This was never one of his strengths.
Right. Congress.
Empathy has never been one of his strengths.
There's talk that Congress may take on this bump stock issue in extension out of Las Vegas as at least a minimal step towards doing something about gun violence. Do you think it's got any legs?
You know, it does look like it today. I guess it could. I think that, you know, logically it should, right? If it makes something act like an automatic weapon and we banned automatic weapons, then we should ban it.
Exactly.
Right? That's a ban we all agree on. So if it stays within that realm, I think so. I'm going to be curious to see if the NRA will know how big of a deal it is if they decide the vote on that bill, if the one does happen, gets rated or not. Right, gets graded, whether that vote will be part of the NRA grade. When the NRA is for something, they don't make it part of their vote. So
right.
That'll be something interesting to watch. And if they make it part of their grade, then I don't know if the thing can pass.
It's hard to keep track of all the big events that pop up every day. Some of Trump's making, some not. Of course, next week we've got a major situation where he has to decide whether he's going to certify or decertify the existing Iran nuclear arrangement. I've heard of the good cop, bad cop theory. I've also heard he's just going to keep the campaign promise regardless of what happens. For those, including Senator Tom Cotton, who think this is a good idea to decertify it, well, what do they think the plan is going to be then? Everybody else stays in, and Iran then gets to do more of what they wanted to do in the first place. So how is this a good idea?
Well, it depends on what we do. I guess the latest idea is to decertify, but don't bring the sanctions back. So then it becomes sort of a, well, we're sending a message, but we're not totally destroying the deal yet. Right. And because bringing back the sanctions, Iran said it would do, if they did that, then we would start, you know, down the road. So that's why I think they want to try this half measure. Don't certify, but Congress won't reinstitute the sanctions.
It's an interesting
ploy. It seems like everybody in the national security world that would like to keep the deal in place is okay with this idea, because essentially it's keeping the deal in place, but being able to pound your chest.
Right. So it's a, political win, but doesn't that also mean that we would have to put more trust in Iran than we already supposedly have to put in with them?
No, I think it certainly gives Iran the rationale to do stuff under, you know, sort of outside the deal and be and to have a rationale. Well, the U.S. isn't abiding by it, so why do we have to? But they really want trade with Europe. And if the European leaders stay in, you know, they want to keep them happy. So, yeah, ironically, Iran may be incentivized to stick to the parameters simply to keep the European countries that signed onto the deal staying in the deal.
Let's roll on this, but the Senate Intelligence Committee heads come out yesterday and revealed a fair amount of information. So they want to get their piece of this done before the end of the year so that they can release the findings to the public, because Russia's still messing around. We still don't hear anything from the president on shutting Russia down. It's not even a priority. He'd like it to go away. He doesn't want to talk about his friend Vladimir or anyone else. The Mueller thing, the Senate thing, the House thing, any change in sense of speed on all three of those?
Well, I think the thing that I was most intrigued by in the press conference yesterday was the importance of that Steele dossier. Number one, the fact that they have confirmed parts of it. Number two, they haven't found anything wrong with it. They just have hit a wall. Well, Senate Intel can hit a wall that Bob Mueller can break through.
Mm-hmm.
So Bob Mueller has more tools to break through walls. He can compel witnesses in ways that the Senate Intel Committee can't. So it tells me that that I would like to have the power of the FBI behind me in investigating something, put it that way.
Sure.
And I think Mueller's probe, if that's as far as Senate Intel got, boy, I'd be really nervous in the White House about where Mueller's probe is going.
The former acting attorney general came out yesterday and said, listen, you people got to remember, because you're setting yourself up for disappointment here, Mueller will only take action on stuff he deems to be criminal. He's not going to come out and say, yeah, that sure looked bad. I think that's an important distinction, too.
Well, I think that's right. You're only going to look, if you're going to level accusations against the president of the United States, it better be solid.
Right.
You can't just speculate on that. You can't do circumstantial.
Yeah, it's not parking tickets. Any plugs you want to throw out?
I'll have. I can do an early one right now. I'm going to sit down with Steve Scalise in his first Sunday show interview.
That's great. Plenty to talk about there.
Since coming back, a lot to talk about. You know what? The Republican agenda. We'll talk about guns. We'll talk about all this stuff. So, a lot going on.
And who do your Packers have this weekend?
Oh, the menace in Dallas.
Well, that's going to be tough.
Menace in Dallas. Somehow they're favored too. Oh, man, no offensive line, and the Packers are 2.5-point favorites in Dallas. That scares me.
They're looking for five fat guys in Green Bay jerseys at this point. That's how bumped up their line is.
That's how it is. How are you loving Jay Cutler? that if it wasn't for one meaningless last-second touchdown 2 games ago, he'd be 0 for his last 8 quarters.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Lighten it up in Miami, baby.
He really is making the Bears regret the whole thing, aren't they?
I thought the enthusiasm he showed on the Wildcat formation was tremendous. He looked less interested than a wife, a girlfriend, or a husband or a boyfriend that was forced to go to the game and was texting.
All right.
See you later.
Monday night. Mitch happens.
Trubisky era begins Monday night.
Baby. All right.
Text me your heckles later.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Here come the Hawks, the mighty Blackhawks. Take the attack, yeah, and we'll back you, Blackhawks. You're flying.
It all starts tonight. One goal, baby. Quest for a cup for 2017-2018. And tonight's the night. Brian Bickle will retire as Chicago Blackhawk. And there's lots of festivities on opening night. Right now, John McDonough is vacuuming the red carpet before he and Jay roll it out. Stan Bowman will be on a little later. But we found out just a few days ago that our friend Judd Surratt had an opportunity, one of these opportunities you just can't turn down. In all of professional sports, in each of the leagues of your four major professional sports, there's, 30 or so play-by-play jobs. And when one opens up in your specialty, and in Jed's case, it's the National Hockey League, you got to take the gig. So with mixed emotions, he's obviously thrilled, but he also was a little sad about it. Jed Surratt announced he's going to be the Boston Bruins' new play-by-play guy. That's pretty good.
That's really good.
Yeah,
it's good for him. I mean,
they're losers, but he's not. He's a winner.
Well, I'm rooting for them now, except when they play the Blackhawks.
Yeah.
It'd be great to see a Blackhawks-Bruins Stanley Cup final again.
Oh, we'll take anybody from the East and slap them around.
Yeah, I'm not going to be too picky.
Yeah. But good for Judd. So then the problem becomes, okay, well, we got to have the right person to do pre and post. We got to have the right person to do the between periods. Who's that person going to be? Well, it seemed to be an easy answer. Ladies and gentlemen, Chris Bowden. Ooh. Chris, welcome to the family.
Thanks, but I think you still have a problem.
What's that?
That it is me.
Oh, I see. You're the problem. Okay.
That's right. And any other problems that may or may not be related to me, feel free to just point the finger my way.
All right, we'll send them.
I'm fine with that.
We'll send them.
Yep, thanks. I'll prepare for that. I'll put up my shield of armor for that and try and deflect them as much as possible.
You got to be, we saw you yesterday here in the building. You got to be thrilled. I mean, you joined the team on opening day, and here you go. You're on WGN. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I reflected back to, it may not have been the same radio frequency, but growing up around here, and when I was a kid, tuning into the old transistor radio, look it up, kids. It's something that happened one time. But tuning into Lloyd Pennett when he was the great voice of the Blackhawks, and he was a one man band back in the day. He did everything, the game between periods. I got it easy compared to that. Being a Blackhawks fan growing up all my life and being associated with them and covering them in various media outlets throughout my time here, including doing pre and post on CSN when it was CSN back in the day.
You got to go all the way back to Saturday for it to be CSN.
that's a revolving door in terms of their titles, but always had a great relationship, especially with this new regime. I mean, it's starting the second decade of Rocky and John and Jay.
Can you believe that?
Now Joel and Johnny and Patrick and Duncan and all those guys. So
wow.
They've always been wonderful to work with, and I couldn't be happier to be back in the mix with them again.
Well, when Chris talks about having been working on Blackhawks broadcast before, he and I worked together at another station in town where Chris and I worked
with BBM.
That's the one.
Yeah.
And Chris and I worked on the Mike Keenan show every week. Remember that?
Yeah, he was a little slightly more grumpier than I was getting up this morning. Usually I'm sawing wood at this time, but occasionally having to wake him up. When he was happy, he was short with his answers.
Oh yeah, Keenan was nuts.
But Hawk line, and we had Panger in the mix back then.
That's right.
So that was probably the start of my extended Blackhawks programming resume.
It's going to be a little different for you, and you're working with the guys who are, I believe, the best radio team in the National Hockey League,
and
John and Troy, and I'm sure they will welcome you with open arms.
Yeah, and I've been around them a lot too, as well.
Yeah,
they're two wonderful guys, and actually got a chance to when this was all in the process. I've watched them through the glass wall from the press box on the other side all these years, and the other night when this opportunity was starting to germinate a little bit, I got a chance. I knew it was my last opportunity to kind of look over Judd's shoulder in terms of what he does in the pre and the intermissions and the post, but also got a closer look at what those two guys do, just a great working relationship, and I'm looking forward to being a part of it as well.
You just have to, when you're talking to Weidman, you just have to know that there's a certain rhythm to the conversation, because he always talks like he talks during a game. I'm going to get coffee. Does anybody want any? I fly you by.
That's right. We have to watch the volume at times, but usually when the volume's up, that's a good thing.
Yes,
so,
exactly right.
I guess I'll just turn the headphones down a little bit and hope that he's screaming and hollering a lot.
This is really an amazing way to get tickets for opening night. Bowden takes a job.
He said when this process got started, this process happened in about 10 minutes.
Yes. Well, I mean, look, the Hawks love you. We love you. So it made sense.
No, I really appreciate that. And it is a wonderful opportunity. And, you know, especially with, you know, I've been searching around for a couple of weeks here. And, you know, you sit around for maybe a week. You think, okay, this is nice. But then it's time to get back to work. And I had actually been doing a little bit of stuff recently with our friend Hub Arkish over at Pro Football Weekly. And, you know, just when I started to do that, like I said in my Facebook post yesterday, you almost wish you had a crystal ball, so because you never know what's around the corner. Sometimes that's a good thing, sometimes that's a bad thing. But I really appreciate Hub allowing me to get back to work, do a little work. But then I feel bad at the same time that for him that this opportunity came about, and we had to end it because you know, all my energies have to. I'm NHL Network and listening to NHL and reading NHL all the time here over the last week or so.
Yeah, we expect you to ignore your family, your friends. You got to know your stuff.
Is there anything else, Chris, you need from us? I mean, can we have Andrea come sit next to you tonight? And like,
yeah, just by the glass, it'd be great.
Well, no, he doesn't sit.
He's going to be upstairs. Upstairs.
Oh, I wanted to show him those seats.
Yeah.
We'll keep a chair open. I think Zarang is the one who's really in charge of the radio booth. So you might need, you know, a written letter to him, and he's the guy we may have to sign off on in terms of getting some space up there. But as far as I'm concerned, Steve, Andrea, anytime. I don't think John or Troy will have a problem with it either. So come on board.
Thank you, Chris.
But not Dave. Mm-hmm.
No, I think he assumed I could go up there if I wanted.
It's called the Dave Ennett Memorial. Oh, wait, wrong stadium. Sorry.
That's the wrong one. Yeah. Chris, congratulations. Have a great time tonight.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Glad to be aboard.
See you later. Chris Bowden, formerly of Comcast.
Sportsnet.
All those.
NBC Sports Chicago.
You know, I used to work with Chris way, way long.
And you were
having
to say you
Network.
Never liked him, right? That he's a completely disagreeable guy?
Yeah, Jeff Joniak was there as well.
Yeah, you know, I was walking Chris around the station this morning. He's worked with everybody in the station at some station or another.
Exactly.
So he can't hold a job.
I didn't say that.
No, everybody wants him.
I'm starting to like him because he's sounding more and more like me.
Yeah.
You know, can't hold a job. Hi, 7:21. Let's do this. We'll take a break. We'll come back and continue. Pat Brady joins us in just a second. Plenty of political stuff to go through, including why is the governor not saying he's going to run?
Mm-hmm. It's a good point. It's a good question because up until
suddenly
now,
you went Florida from the Jeffersons.
I know. Mm-hmm. It's true.
Pat Brady's here. Pat, where do you work?
Next Generation Strategies.
Nice to see it. Lots of questions asked, but first I want to mention the Lincoln Forum, which is public policy without the snooze.
Yeah, talk about the issues of the day with people that are involved and people that have a perspective. And this upcoming event on Tuesday at 5:30 at Chicago Athletic Association is a media panel with an all-star media panel. Marianne Ahern from Channel 5, Craig Wall from Channel 7, Mike Flannery from Fox, and Rick Pearson, as you say, the best political writer
in America, baby.
In America, maybe the galaxy, and hosted by Steve Cochran.
Yeah, and it was as recent as yesterday that the president threw out this fake news nonsense that he continues to perpetrate. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about what the media is doing right and wrong, and how to survive and thrive with limited budgets in a time where more news is needed. And they'll also tell stories they wouldn't tell anywhere else.
Yeah, we can talk about the political landscape, too, nationally. We've got a lot of stuff going on here in the state of Illinois. And these are the best in the business. We're lucky here in Chicago. We have great political reporters.
So where do we get tickets?
LincolnForum.org.
Hope to see you Tuesday night. Where is it again?
Chicago Athletic Association.
Well, I hear that's beautiful.
Newly renovated. It's spectacular. And that's why we wanted to do it there. It's a great four or five different bars. There's an upstairs rooftop restaurant bar. There's a game room. There's an old speakeasy. It's not a club either. It's a hotel. So don't be
great. Great place. I mean, it's go
really,
to the forum, then go
really
upstairs
great.
To Cindy's.
We're thrilled that we teamed up.
Is the restaurant bar upstairs? Is that the thing with like four tables? It's like super tiny.
Cindy's is the rooftop, which you can have
what's
an appetizer.
Because it's
Cherry
it's,
Circle Room is the
that's it.
Yeah, that's fantastic. It's small. It's a small like it's, yeah. it's kind of a speakeasy. It's yeah. really great
they
food all, though.
They also have renovated it like there was an old basketball court that they turned into a room. I think there was an old pool area that they turned yeah. into a room where you can hold events. Then there's, you know, Marianne Ahern mentioned it yesterday. The room that we're doing the event, I think, is where she had her wedding reception.
Right.
And there were the games too, like
the game room,
play,
which is
game
right
room.
Behind where we're going to be. So
that's
it's
cool.
really
cool.
It's a spectacular place.
Great venue.
Is the governor going to run?
Oh, absolutely.
So why not just answer the question and say yes, I am?
I think he has answered it, but there might be some political gain just to having creating the buzz and whether or not he's going to run. But the people that are spreading.
Apparently, you've answered that correctly based on the ding I heard in the background there. Whenever Pat answers a question correctly, a bell goes off.
Sorry about that. Was that I've you? Never done radio before. Sorry.
Yeah, I know. You knew. So you don't think there's any question he's running?
No, he's running.
Okay.
There's a group now of people that are upset by signing HB 40, and I understand that's an emotional issue, but the reality is the only person, the only Republican that can win and beat J.B. Pritzker is Bruce Rauner.
What about Chris Kennedy?
Well, I think Chris Kennedy for us as Republicans is harder to beat. I think JB we can beat because he's Madigan's guy, but I think Chris Kennedy has an independent appeal, particularly with the African-American community.
Now, is it true or not true that JB Pritzker wants to raise property taxes 500%? Because that's what I'm hearing.
Well, every one of the Democratic candidates, I feel bad because Eric's not here to tell me how stupid I am, but they all, if we elect a Democrat, we're going to get some kind of tax increase. I don't know what form that'll take, and we're not going to get any property tax reform. I think I've said it before. My property taxes that I just paid, I paid more in property tax than I made my first year as a salary out of law school.
It's crazy.
And that's not just me. That's everybody, and we're getting killed with taxes.
Absolutely.
Soda tax, property tax, mm-hmm. yeah. income tax, corporate tax.
Yeah.
Tax everything.
So it's going well. I won't take up that bill in the
specifics
of it.
Well, the thing, the point the governor makes, the difference between what the Republicans and the Democrats are talking about, Governor Rauner says, we can't tax our way to prosperity. You need more taxpayers, not more taxes. That's why these Amazon deals and things like that, we need to bring business here.
Right. Yeah, and like yesterday. So we'll talk about this bill, HB 40.
Yes.
When we come back at 7:30. Eric Edelstein's on the road today, by the way, and refusing to do the show because he can't find a phone. But before we get to...
I think he's still mad that we didn't give him one putt at his course last week.
Tough break. Before we get to that, we'll get to the big story next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Steve, Mayor Rahm Emanuel, 1,000 show. I can't believe you can't get another job. So thank God for WGN. We'll take care of you. Amy's dedicating a year's supply of extra dinosaur kale for you, and I just wish the best that you can survive it. On a serious note, thank you so much for your commitment to the city on this anniversary of and commemorating a milestone not only in your career but in the voice you've given Chicago. Congratulations again. Best wishes. I'll see you soon, buddy.
Mayor Rahm Emanuel.
Wow.
I've never had anyone say to me, you can't get another job. It's usually you can't hold the job you have.
Have you ever had anybody donate a year's supply of kale to you, homegrown?
No.
Yeah.
No.
You're a lucky guy.
No, and I like the mayor's wife. I'm not that fond of him, as you know, but I like the mayor's wife. And I would hope that she would be decent enough not to give me a year's worth of kale. Dave, it's going straight to you if that happens.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah. It is 7:41. Back to Pat Brady. All right, so I think we need some explaining because the headline, this is the problem. The headline writers don't do enough work. The headline writers have to look for a headline that'll make you click and read their story, or if you're buying newspapers, buy the paper. But we'll kill you, buy the paper. And buy the newspaper. For that reason, a story that is nuanced, like the governor's approval of HB 40, needs some explanation. So why shouldn't conservatives be really upset at the governor over this?
Well, it's social conservatives, not economic conservatives, and I think there's a difference. The social conservatives are very upset with him because he signed HB 40, which provides Medicaid funding so poor women have access to abortions. It also had a second provision, a trigger provision, that if the United States Supreme Court ever overturns Roe v. Wade, which defines the right to privacy for women and allows abortions to be legal up to a certain point in this country. If that's ever overturned in Illinois, it still will be in place, which I think is dubious on its constitutional grounds, but that's another story. But he signed that bill, And a lot of the social conservatives are angry because they think this expands abortion. I think the governor's position, I think he stated it very well, we can't make a choice being that rich women are entitled to medical services that poor women can't get. And we're just talking off air. Mm-hmm. It's a very small number of people that actually use public funding for abortions.
It's like less, less than 3%.
Yeah, it's an emotional issue, and I understand the anger, but the governor did what he said he was going to do all along. He's a pro-choice governor, always has been, and he did what he thought was the right thing. I don't think there was any political calculation. I think he just did what he believed to be the right thing. And
well, here's the deal. You have to, regardless of how you feel about it, you have to accept that we'll be a state that it would have no Medicaid whatsoever. Because you can't pick and choose, as you said. You can't say we're going to cover this, but we're not going to cover that. We're going to cover that, but we're not going to cover this. So if Medicaid is going to be a part of our lives, then this bill allows for there to be an equal playing field if somebody chooses to have that.
Exactly.
Yes. I would even, Pat, and I said off the air, I said I think Rauner, if anything, has secured, if he officially announces he's going to run again, which we think he will, is he secured his, I guess, maybe place with suburban Democrats, female, who otherwise might have said, "Oh, I'm not a fan of Pritzker, not a fan of Kennedy, for whatever reason might have been." But now he's kind of made himself a little bit more moderate.
Yeah, and I think he's always been. He's a fiscal. He's kind of like Mark Kirk. He's a fiscal conservative, but he's a social moderate. In fact, if you really look at the history of the state, who wins as a Republican statewide, they are fiscal conservatives and social moderates. Jim Edgar, 3-term, very popular governor downstate. Judy Bart Topinka, Mark Kirk, and I completely sympathize with the social conservatives that they feel that this is wrong. But the reality is we are much more as a party. I think Republicans united on the economic issues that Governor Rauner has been talking about for the last couple of years. And I think that's why, even though there's angst right now, I think the Republican Party will be unified going into 2018.
All right. In the first 90 seconds of this segment, we explained the simplicity of the decision and why there really wasn't an option for a law-abiding governor to make other than to support this bill. Why is the Rauner messaging team having such a problem getting that message out?
I think
because here's the deal. Ignoring it and hope the public gets it is the wrong move.
Yeah, he's had some problems this summer with messaging. We had the change where they, I think everybody agrees, is a big mistake bringing these people in from the ultra-conservative Illinois Policy Institute who proved to be incompetent. One of the headlines of the Sun-Times came from the CEO of the Illinois, that headline you saw, Benedict Rauner, that came from the president of the, or CEO of the Illinois Policy Institute. He brought these people in. Very conservative, honestly not competent. So he's rebuilding his communications team. I think he's brought in some people that are going to help him, and he'll be better on the messaging. But I agree, there was some mixed messaging during the session where he made statements to some legislators that he was not going to sign this, and they're upset with him. And I know he's reaching out to all of them and explaining why he did what he did. But all that being said, and it is important, we have huge issues in the state that we need to deal with. Beyond this, we need to bring more business here. We're still running a deficit. We still have a huge debt. So, you know, Governor Rauner, I think, has a message there that I think he's much more in tune with the rest of the state on his reform message.
Lots to talk about in regards to President Trump, Secretary of State Tillerson.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Could you address the main headline of this story that you called the president a moron? And if not, where do you think these reports or
I'm not going to deal with petty stuff like that. I mean, this is what I don't understand about Washington. Again, you know, I'm not from this place, but the places I come from, we don't deal with that kind of petty nonsense. And it is intended to do nothing but divide people. And I'm just not going to be part of this effort to divide this administration.
Yeah, you are. You kind of are. Is it possible, Pat Brady, that General Mattis, I mean, I believe the NBC story, that General Mattis, General McMaster, and General Kelly sat down with Tillerson and said, look, we've got to stay. The four of us have to be here. We need you to stay. He doesn't need the money, obviously. He's got millions and millions and millions. And he, frankly, doesn't need the aggravation, and he doesn't need to be minimized by the guy that's his boss in a way that a Secretary of State's never been minimized. So is he staying now simply because he's become part of that group of four that really feels they have to protect the country from the president?
I hope so. But I think there's a couple different things. As I watched this yesterday, if he goes right now or in the next week or so, he doesn't want to be the guy that got booted for calling the president a blank moron, because that'll be the headline. So, but I also think the group you just mentioned, the real patriots, which I consider the Secretary of State to be one, probably have told him, hey, this is not Donald Trump. This is the presidency of the United States, and it needs to be respected whether you hate the guy that's actually the president or not or think he is a moron. I think that was more the calculation for him and for those guys. And I hope the one bright spot of the Trump administration has been the people you've mentioned that have actually – I don't know what it would be like if we would have put a Steve Bannon or somebody like that in one of these spots.
So that would be a nightmare.
It would be a nightmare. And the shots from Puerto Rico, and he was better yesterday, the president, were – if you watched them like a lot of us did, were really kind of sickening.
With the paper towels.
The paper towels.
Right.
So like he's doing three-point shots.
No, completely.
So if there's any credence to this theory, and I'm certainly not the first one to say it, that those four are protecting the country from the guy that currently is the president of the United States, why is this not an express lane 911 priority for Congress to remove him from office?
It's a good question. I talked to a lot of people in the last couple of weeks that are wondering, including Governor Kasich, wondering where are the people that are going to stand up and say something. I think people...
Because literally... The only one who has come close is John McCain, the guy that's dying of cancer. That's the only one.
McCain and Governor Kasich has too, I think.
But I'm talking about a guy that's in Congress now.
I agree, and it's a question, but the Republicans have an agenda I think they want to try to get done. But speaking to
people, what difference? That's the thing that drives me crazy. Who cares what the agenda is in a year from now if we're in war with somebody or if the whole thing is turned upside down by the guy who continues to cause this damage?
I agree, and I don't quite understand it either. I'm just trying to maybe explain the reasoning, but a lot of these Republicans come from districts where Trump's still very popular in some of the southern states that he won, and I think that it's just a political calculation. I'm not going to do it till after the primary, but we'll wait and see what happens. I'm not doing to speak for anybody.
No, I know you're not, but it's so funny to me because you're basically saying...
I don't like to defend it either.
The drunken uncle comes over and ruins Thanksgiving every year. Maybe this year will be different. We'll wait to see because that's what we're talking about, right? We're talking about congressmen and congresswomen who are going, well, I'm going to roll the dice and hope that I have an office that I can win next year and hope that the guy that continues to be the clown doesn't clown it up so bad and break America in a way we can't fix it.
It's not our finest moment, I don't think, as Republicans. And if you talk to people in Washington, if something doesn't get done legislatively, we might be in for a catastrophic election in 2018 midterm. Might not happen. Been wrong on my predictions for the last 2 years, but that's not just me talking. That's people that are in D.C. I hope not. I hope they can get the tax bill done. It doesn't look very good right now. And hope they can get maybe an infrastructure bill.
2018 seems like 5 years from now.
Yeah. But you look at the Democrats don't say anything, and like Eric has mentioned all the time,
that's ridiculous.
When the other side's killing themselves, you just don't talk, and you don't hear much from Pelosi or Schumer because they know it's all bad for our side right now.
But that's just as bad. That's you talk about whether or not anybody in the Trump administration was colluding or complicit. The Democrats are completely complicit in this immediate destruction of this country and this democracy. And no, I'm not being dramatic.
No, watching the Puerto Rican films to me really brought it home, or the clips of the president, that this guy really does not have a clue what it means to be president of the United States.
You said when right after the aftermath of Maria, and they said, well, President Trump's going to go visit the region. At one point you said, Steve, it'd be better if he didn't go.
Yeah, they've been through enough.
He didn't. Did you watch the press conference too?
Yeah,
yesterday with
Vegas. It was all about him.
It was so awkward. The setup was awkward, and then kind of turning to the sheriff at one point and saying, well, do you have any leads? How you doing?
Yeah, we're all doing a great job. My administration's the best. It's disturbing, but he's president. We're stuck with him right now.
But there's a job. This is the thing about the co-equal branches of government. Each has a job that was set forth in the Constitution by the founding fathers to protect the Constitution and protect the country. And I'm not exaggerating when I say we need to be protected from the president of the United States. We trace the call. He's in the House. We have to be protected from the guy who has the job. And the idea that everybody's just going to sit around and go, well, it's not really my job, and I hope it works out okay, it's outrageous. The only guy that's even come close is McCain. I will say Bob Corker, who's leaving the Senate. He stepped up yesterday and said, well, we need Tillerson because Tillerson, Mattis, McMaster, and Kelly are the only guys keeping this country from spinning into a place we can't get it back from.
Yeah, Mike Lee a little bit too, but obviously led by McCain, the Patriots are leading the way here, the generals and the military people. But it's not good. It's not a good situation for Republicans, and I don't think we'll get any big change or outrage until the elections in November. When
hope we get there.
I listen.
13 months, Steve. 13 months.
Yeah,
hang on.
I agree. I really think, and I know it's structurally almost impossible, but that might be an opportunity because the Democrats, when they ever become center of attention, have their issues too. They're going almost socialist on the far left.
The Democrats had their run; they didn't get it done. The Republicans are now screwing up their run. There's never been a time where a third party should be more welcome. It's not possible to even get one started because of gerrymandering. The gerrymandering issues in the Supreme Court may or may not go the way of breaking up that system.
Those arguments were yesterday, too,
yeah.
So hopefully.
And we should hear a decision in about 6 weeks, maybe. But we just don't have time to mess around with a clown running the show.
Yeah, we've had some bad presidents and survived it, but I've never lived through anybody this bad. Nixon was bad because of the impeachment, but I've never seen somebody I just don't think understands the job.
Any part of it.
Or appreciates it, or appreciates the sacrifice that people have made, or the suffering that people have. This ain't exactly Reagan's Challenger speech, what we saw. Democrat and Republican. President Obama, after the shootings, he gave one of the best speeches I ever heard of a president. One of the shootings, I meant the Colorado shooting. Just outstanding.
He was great in South Carolina.
And he understood the role.
Bush on the pile in New York City after 9/11. Epic. Clinton after Oklahoma City. Superb. Reagan with a Challenger speech. This president cannot come close to being in the same shoes of those four.
And all of them had problems at the time, and all of them rose to the challenge,
yeah.
And rose to the occasion. This
yep.
guy goes the other way. He makes it worse, like you said. And I don't know.
We're going to discuss this with some of the best members of the media who cover this every day next Tuesday night at the Lincoln Forum. And the Lincoln Forum takes place where and when?
Tuesday, October 10th, 5:30 at the Chicago Athletic Association, lincolnforum.org. And for you listeners that want to get a up close and personal look at Steve Cochran and Andrea Darlis, this is your opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll be in pants.
You'll be more pleased with Andrea than maybe Steve.
Oh, no question.
can I heckle? I'll be in the audience. Can I heckle?
Oh, we're all heckling.
Okay. Yeah.
That's why we have beer for the first hour.
And we will have Marianne Ahern, Craig Wall from Marianne Ahern from Channel 5, Craig Wall from Channel 7. Mike Flannery from Fox and Rick Pearson from your Chicago Tribune and Tribune Media Properties.
All-star panel.
And,
very excited. Come on out. It'll be fun.
We'll talk about all sorts of media stuff. And are we taking questions?
Oh, yeah. That's what we're trying to do. We don't want it to be one of those rubber chicken things.
Mm, okay.
We want people to take – we want interaction. Get a glass of wine and ask Steve Cochran
a question.
And
I'm trying to arrange a special guest. Yeah, that you and I talked about on the golf course. I'm trying to arrange a special guest.
Oh, so, that's a great guest.
Yeah, we'll see if we can get that done. Marvin from Wheaton won a $25 McDonald's Arch card. Pat, where do you work again?
Next Generation Strategies. Thank
Follow
you, sir.
Him all over social media, and we're back with the news next on 720 WGN.
Say, Mary.
Mary.
Mary again.
Mary again.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me good.
I am off tomorrow. So is Dean Richards.
All the rumors are going to start.
But this is the part where Dean and his friend Jim Toronto take a romantic Greek cruise. And I'll be in Birmingham, Alabama, waiting for Tropical Storm Nate to get me.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, we were not able to make the arrangements for Toronto.
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a shocker.
Yeah, that's a shame. So maybe he can go with you to Birmingham, though.
I know Jim Toronto's fun anywhere. Just a fine, fun
wear
time.
His special Alabama brooch.
he'd be a big hit in the bars down there, wouldn't he?
Sure, he's got some special jewelry that he could wear down in the deep south.
So, by the way, when I get to Alabama, how pro-Trump do you think I'm going to get? I'm going to be on the golf courses. Everybody comes up and go, oh, why talk politics? We're playing golf.
Where are your Make America Great Again hat?
I have it in two colors.
There you go.
I got a red and in white.
Will you have a banjo on your knee?
I could.
As the song goes?
Yeah.
Come from Alabama with a banjo on my knee.
Yeah, I'm going to Louisiana something, something.
From My True Love 4-2-C.
Yeah, that's the one.
I think.
John from Algonquin won a $75 gift card to Greek Islands, America's most popular Greek restaurant locations in Chicago's Greek town and Lombard.
I love that restaurant, but only when you can't go to the actual Greek Islands.
You're leaving when tomorrow?
I'm leaving
you're leaving today.
I'm leaving today.
Yeah, you packed yet?
I've got my neck pillow on right now.
Where do you fly into?
We fly in.
Because you're taking Southwest, I heard. So you're flying to Midway from O'Hare.
We actually go to Alabama first and then to Tulsa. It's an odd route.
78 stops between here and Athens.
It's quite a few, but we wound up saving about $30 in the fare.
Well, then why wouldn't you do
so,
it?
No, actually, this cruise that we've been talking about for a long time, we start in Venice, going to be in Venice first, and then to Dubrovnik in Croatia, which I hear is amazing. I've never been. I can't wait. And then to the Greek islands, and then we wind up in Athens.
And it should be a fabulous trip, and it's a whole bunch of WGN listeners. And what do you do with them to entertain them? Do you do your fabulous sleight of hand magic?
I've been working on a ventriloquism act that I think is going to knock them dead.
See, that's why you should bring Jim Toronto, because you could have your dummy on your lap.
I was hoping, but boy, you know, we just could not make those arrangements.
He just creeped you out too much.
For some reason.
All right, well, it's a long list of show business news today, kids. A new benefit concert featuring former presidents. And no, I'm not talking about the presidents of the United States of America. I'm talking about the presidents of the United States of America. Tom Petty record sales go up. Oh, boy, that'll happen when you die. Springsteen's in the news. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominees have been announced. There's a very funny video we are recommending. And we can even cover some movies if we haven't. Though I think you talked about the big one yesterday.
I could talk about some of the other ones that are opening tomorrow. Because I won't be here to...
Why don't we do that first, and then we'll take the break.
Oh.
So what movies are out opening tomorrow?
Well, the big one is Blade Runner 2049, the much-anticipated sequel to the 1980 Ridley Scott-directed movie. Harrison Ford is back in the movie, and he's joined by Ryan Gosling in the movie. There's spoilers all over it, so I don't want to get too deep into the plot, but this time... Ryan Gosling is a Blade Runner. He's the one who is looking for androids getting rid of them. And he is out searching for Harrison Ford, who he believes needs to be eliminated, yet he himself is an android.
Now, you're speaking about Android phones, right? So, like, one's a Motorola, the other is a Samsung.
One is a Samsung. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. They've updated it quite a bit. This is maybe one of the most spectacular looking movies that I've seen in a really, really long time. I expect this to get all kinds of nominations in the technical categories, because it is phenomenal. But as I've said so many times, and is my biggest pet peeve about movies, if the story's not there, the movie's not there. And I think that is unfortunately what I think is the problem with this movie, which, by the way, is 2 hours and 45 minutes.
Good Lord.
Another pet peeve of mine. That's a long time to ask someone to sit there. It seems a little pretentious. Also, I think most people maybe saw the first Blade Runner 30 years ago, probably have not seen it every week since it's opened, like some people and a lot of critics that I know have. It's getting rave reviews from the super, super, super fans in this movie. But I don't think I don't think a new movie should be dependent on seeing the old movie. And a movie should stand on its own. And I'm not sure that this one really does that. I've got some real problems with the storytelling in this one. So I only wound up giving it a B-. And everybody else is, you know, going crazy. So if you're fanatic about Blade Runner, you'll probably like it way better than I did.
All right. And what else?
There's a movie that is called The Mountain Between Us that stars Kate Winslet.
Story of you and Jim Toronto.
And Idris Elba. I'm so sorry that we were not able to make those arrangements. Because, man, that would have been a hell-like trip for me. So darn it that that didn't happen.
Things happen.
But anywho, the movie is The Mountain Between Us. Kate Winslet, Idris Elba. They are two strangers who meet in an airport. They're trying to get home from business trips. And there's a snowstorm. Commercial flights are all grounded. So they hire this crazy guy to take up his private plane during the storm because that's how badly they need to get home. Fortunately, the plane is not able to make the trip. I guess you've probably seen it in the commercial, so I'm not giving away too much of the plot line by saying the plane crashes.
Are they the only two survivors?
They are the only two survivors, Steve. Mm. These two and the crazy pilot's dog that was on the movie also does survive this. It's rather, it's beautiful. This is another movie that is absolutely beautifully shot. The scenery is amazing, and these mountainy, frigid, cold, snowy environment in which they have to somehow survive and try to get out of there somehow. That's what the story is about. Beautiful movie. Story falls short again, and especially the ending of this movie. But really good performances. Again, beautifully shot. And I gave this one Dean's List B minus. Also, come on, you movie makers, you gotta have a story. The story has to be there, or the movie's not there for me, at least.
I couldn't agree more. And those are the main movies to be considered.
My Little Pony is also.
Is that a movie, or you're just having one of your spells?
He's packing.
Take My Little Pony on the plane. Is that Dean Richards with a little My Little Pony doll over there?
You know someone would see you, Dean, and recognize you.
I use it as a neck pillow.
Yeah.
They took the toy, and I think it's a TV series. Honestly, I'm not up on My Little Pony lore as much as I probably should be. But they turned that into a movie also, and because I was working so hard trying to get Jim Toronto on this trip, I did not have time to see My Little Pony this week, so you are on your own with that.
Well, I think what I'm hearing, the gratuitous violence and the unneeded sex scenes are really the ones that are the problem.
Nudity. Turns out the pony is not so little after all. What?
What happened?
I don't even know what that means.
What happened?
I don't know what that means.
8:23, back with the rest of the showbiz news, and more at the end of a second. Mary.
You'll be calling his name. Dean Richards, the entertainment editor, Channel 972.
All right, the former presidents are all getting together for a benefit concert. Is this in Austin?
This is going to be at the campus of A&M University. Texas A&M University.
Yeah, that's Austin.
Yeah. At their...
No, it's not. Where is Texas A&M?
Texas A&M is a college...
College Station?
Or is it That's Lubbock? Right. Yeah, it's one of those.
And where's College Station, Mike? What's it near?
It's about 2 hours, I would say, northwest of Houston.
Okay.
In that area.
It's a little more reasonable for President George W. Or H.W. Bush to get there because he doesn't travel well.
It's actually, this whole thing is being put on by his official presidential library. It's a big benefit concert for hurricane relief, and there are going to be huge country music stars performing at this. Alabama, the Gatlin Brothers, Lyle Lovett, Lee Greenwood is going to host it, Sam Moore, Yolanda Adams, Cassidy Pope, Stephanie Quayle. But here's the interesting part. Also in attendance at this show, I don't know if they're performing, Steve. I hope they are. Mm-hmm. Presidents Obama, George Bush 43 and 41, President Clinton and President Carter, the five former presidents.
We know Clinton can play the saxophone.
Right.
George W. Bush, I see, is more of a yodeler.
Right. Barack Obama has sung many times.
Barack Obama's got a great voice. He could be the lead.
Yeah.
And Jimmy Carter, a lot of people don't know this, Jimmy Carter way into hip-hop.
Yeah. You guys don't see them just emceeing and kind of making a few welcoming statements?
No,
I don't.
Jimmy Carter.
Jam
Jimmy
session?
Carter's hip-hop name is Ice Peanut.
Ah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm hoping they open with Land of a Thousand Dances.
That'd be tremendous.
La, na, 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 na.
Well, it's a cool thing. Good for them. good for them and good for the artist stepping up. We see this every time a major artist dies. Everybody wants to buy their records in.
Very, very good for business. Dying, turns out, is a
big moneymaker.
Very good for business. Tom Petty music, since he passed away on Monday, has increased in sales 6,800%.
Wow.
Compared to 2 days before his death. His albums, his digital songs from his music with the Heartbreakers and Traveling Wilburys sold more than 200,000 albums and downloads since Monday.
It's amazing. Absolutely amazing. Springsteen, what's going on with him?
He just opened a show on Broadway. It's a solo show in which he does his his own music, his solo but solo and acoustic, which is very cool. It's going to be on Broadway for a short time, Springsteen on Broadway. But he opened the show with a tribute to Tom Petty when the show opened on Tuesday. Told the audience, whenever we saw each other, it was like running into a long-lost brother. Our world will be a sadder place without him.
Well, that's a nice touch. And the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominees have been announced. Anybody surprising there?
No, not really. I have to go down my list. I keep a list of who got snubbed again for the 100th time.
Yep.
And I've stopped doing it for memory because some people have gotten in that were on my list, and I'm not sure who is, who isn't. But now these aren't the people who are in. These are the people who are nominated to get in. And they include Radiohead, Rage Against the Machine, Bon Jovi. I got to think they're for sure to get in, right? Bon Jovi. Depeche Mode, Judas Priest, The Cars, Dire Straits, The Eurythmics, the J. Giles Band, and also LL Cool J.
Eurythmics, yay.
Pretty big list.
This is who is nominated. So now people in the industry will vote from that list. Five of them will be chosen, but also the public can vote. You can go to rockhall.com. The public also gets a say in all of this, and then they'll announce who will be inducted in December, and the induction ceremony itself will be in New York, as always, on April the 14th.
Let me go to Steve Grzanich here for a second. Multiple media outlets now reporting what, Steve?
That Skip Haines has died. Oh. Of course, he wrote Lakeshore Drive. No other information about how he died or what the circumstances are, but that he has died this morning.
We will update you when we get more information on it.
Really nice guy.
Never met him.
Have known him since the song Lakeshore Drive came out in 1975. Have been at many events with him, but always a super nice guy. And he, along with, Alyota Haynes and Jeremiah, were the people who gave us the song Lakeshore Drive, and it's one of the most iconic Chicago songs of all time.
And Mitch Alyota died just about a year ago, I think.
Yeah, exactly right.
So
he just had a book out, too, Skip Haynes.
Is that right?
I believe he just had a book. I think it was called Lakeshore Drive, if I remember correctly.
That would be good marketing.
Yeah.
All right. There is also a video we recommend you see, but we'll hold that for now. And that's a Miley Cyrus, a Jimmy Fallon version of Islands in the Stream, which is getting a lot of play online today.
So we'll play that when we're both back here together.
Yes. And have a great trip. You're
you
gone
too.
For how long?
You too. I'll be it's almost going to be 2 weeks. It's almost 2 weeks.
Okay. And in the meantime, if the winds of Tropical Storm Nate turn into Hurricane Nate and blow, hard enough, I could end up in the Greek islands with you. So I may see you there.
More than welcome. I've got a Speedo with your name on it. I literally do have a Speedo with your name. I don't know why I decided to put your name in it. But it's weird.
That's what friends are for.
That's weird. That's going to be weird when security TSA is going through my luggage.
Why do you have a Speedo with Steve on it? Nothing. No, what?
None of your business.
All right, man. Safe trip.
Wow. Have fun, Dean.
Back with the big story next at 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Tonight, As we continue live from the Allstate Showcase studio with show number 1003. The Hawks open against the Pittsburgh Penguins. Lots of new faces on the ice. Watch out for this guy, John Hayden. I'm telling you. In a very good camp. The guy that puts this team together, well, that's Stan Bowman. And Stan joins us now. And the obvious question for you, Stan, on opening night is, what are you going to be for Halloween? What? No, that's not, that's not the question.
I don't know, Steve. You have any suggestions for me?
That's not the question. The question is, how excited are you? Do you keep getting excited? Because Q told me the other day he still gets butterflies.
I'm very excited. I can't wait to get going. I think we had a good, you know, training camp and exhibition season, but, you know, nothing compares to getting it going for real tonight. And I know talking to everybody around here and our players are really excited for this new season. We got a little bit of a different look, but a lot of familiar names and faces. So I think that combination is something to be excited as we start things tonight.
And if you want a great trivia question to impress your Blackhawk friends, who's older, Artemi Panarin or Brandon Saad? Everybody thinks Saad's like 28. Saad's what, six months younger than
–
yeah, Saad's like 6 months younger than Panarin.
Even more than that, I think. But
oh,
he's, Brandon doesn't even turn 25 till later in October. So it's amazing what Brandon has accomplished at such a young age, you know, with a couple Stanley Cups. And, you know, he's really coming into his own as a player. I think everyone remembers how impressive he was a couple years ago. And he's an even better player now. He's matured a little bit and physically stronger. And, you know, his contribution is going to be significant for us. So really excited to have Saad back with us.
The Breakfast of the Blackhawks sponsored by MB Financial Bank. And Dave, what time is pregame tonight?
Pregame tonight is at 7, although Ro and Anna will be out there starting at 3, and they get the red carpet event this afternoon also. So,
and Chris Bowden will be
handling the pregame
tonight
at 7 o'clock.
Again, want to wish Judd all the best, as the Blackhawks organization does as well, with his new job with the Bruins.
Yeah, he does his first game tonight against Nashville in Boston.
You know, speaking of Nashville, Stan, I've complimented you on and off the air about this. I thought the aggressive stance you took after the playoff mess last spring was a thrill to Blackhawk fans and really fired everybody up for the summer and the off months, and then making a lot of changes and doing all the things you have to do as Stan Bowman in the off season. So congratulations to you, but who are you most excited to see skate tonight?
Well, it's a combination of a couple familiar faces, Saad and Sharp. I think they're guys, you know, that our fans know well, and I think we're happy to have them back. But, you know, I think, you know, it's pretty special to have a young 19-year-old kid, Alex DeBrincat. He's going to make his debut tonight. And, you know, he's one of those guys that I think it's easy to cheer for him. He's always sort of been overlooked when he was a younger player. He was always a little guy, and everyone thought he was talented but just too small. And, you know, he's coming off a long way. So we have to give him a lot of credit for the work he's put in the last couple years. And really excited to see him. You know, it's interesting to watch his camp. You know, he quietly goes about his business. He's not like a flashy player, but then you look down and he seems to get goals and assists every game, and he makes a lot of good plays with the puck. So really excited to see Alex.
Stan, did you think when camp began that he would be on the roster on opening night?
You know, we didn't really handicap it that way. I mean, we certainly were hopeful that he was going to come in and do what he had done the previous couple seasons. You know, it's pretty special to score the amount of goals that he did. But until you get to the NHL and see how he performs with other NHL players, you aren't quite sure. So I can't say I had really an expectation either way. I was excited to see how he would look when he got on the ice with, you know, all the NHL players. And you know, he seems to just keep getting better. I think, you know, as we go along here, I expect him to continue to get acclimated. But he's got a ton of talent, and he's a, you know, he's a pretty even keel guy. So I think he's going to be able to handle everything thrown his way.
Your core of defensemen obviously is much different, even though it's got some very familiar guys back there. But it's a different group, and it's eight guys. So do you foresee kind of it's going to be a little bit of a learning process here as far as how these guys are paired up in the early part of the season?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to characterize it. I do think we're, you know, we're going to have some different looks, and we're going to try to find some combinations that are effective. You know, they've tinkered around with some different pairings throughout the preseason, so we have a lot of looks we could use. But obviously, we've got, you know, probably four, you know, established NHL players in Keith Seabrook, Murphy, and Cody Franson. And then after that, we've got some young players who have some experience, like Forsling and Kempney. And even Jordan Osterley has, you know, some games with a couple years ago with the Oilers. So they've all played a little bit. And then we've got Jan Ruta, who's come in. You know, he's technically a first-year guy, but he is 27 years old. So he's not really too intimidated by anything. You know, I think he's probably been the biggest surprise of the camp. You know, we were really excited when we signed him this summer. We weren't sure if he'd be ready right away for the NHL with getting acclimated to the different setup here in North America, but he's been excellent. So, you know, you put it all together, and, you know, I have a lot of confidence in our coaches to find out how they're going to roll them out and who they're going to use in different situations. But you're right, it's a different look, but I'm excited about the potential of the group.
With Hossa gone, with Haas on the bench, well, now he's not allowed on the bench right now, with Haas watching at home, somebody's got to take some of those physical minutes, those minutes on the other end. Is Sauter going to play a little bit of that role, do you think?
Yeah, I definitely think Richard Panik as well. You know, right now, I think we're going to probably start with Jonathan Toews, and those two guys will be his wingers, Panik and Saad. And I think, you know, all three of those players have some of the attributes that Marian brought to the table. Nobody really replaces Marian, and we're not trying to replace him. But I think style-wise, you know, there's a lot of strength on that line. There's a lot of power. There's a good two-way game. You know, and I think you look at Brandon Saad's contributions. He can kill penalties. He can play the power play. 5-on-5, he can play against really good players. So I think if anyone's probably close to replicating Marian's style, it would be Brandon Saad.
And tell us about John Hayden, because I'm excited about him.
Yeah, John's a real energetic player. He's obviously a big, strong guy. I think, you know, as an opponent, you have to keep your head up when he's on the ice. Yeah, he likes to be physical and get in on the forecheck. And, you know, we saw a little bit of John last year. He came in later in the year, and he had a nice contribution for a guy that it just got dropped in late. But now he's at a full training camp. You know, I think if there's one thing, if there's one player that showed a real determination that he was going to be on this team, it was John Hayden. From the day we started, you know, he was like on a mission to prove that he belongs in the NHL. So certainly a credit to John for his effort and his training. So he's put himself in a great position, and yeah, I think the fans are going to like the style he plays. He's an honest player. He's hard to play against, and he's going to bring us some energy.
Penguins opened with a tie last night. And of course,
well, yeah, you're right. I mean, overtime loss.
Well, you have to have a tie to get to the overtime
That's
loss.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
Yeah. So the Penguins opened with a tie and an OTL last night. But they get a point to coming in, and they're the champs until they're not. Stan, I've been saying all along, they're holding our cup till we take it back. I love that the schedule is set up this way, where you get them right out of the gate.
Yeah, I think it's a great, certainly, test. You know, to start our season, they're an incredible team. You know, back-to-back cups is very, very difficult to do. So they've got a lot of weapons offensively. They can score a lot of goals. You know, they've got a little bit of everything on their team, so it's a challenge. You know, you're playing against Sidney Crosby, you know, probably one of the top players in all of hockey right now, and he's sort of at the top of, you know, of his career. So I think it's going to be a test for us, and it's a good way to start your year. You know that you're going to have to be ready, and you can see where you're at playing against such a strong opponent.
Well, you've done a great job as always, and it's never just Kane and Toews, but when you go tonight, if you're lucky enough to be there, just know that Kane's never been bigger. Toews, I don't believe, has ever been hungrier, and it's going to be a great season, just an absolute great season. And all this brought to you by MB Financial Bank. Thank you for that. And I've got a question for you, Stan, before I let you fly. This is part of Breakfast with the Blackhawk. What was your favorite Halloween costume you had as a kid?
Well, this one wasn't very creative, but I believe it or not, one year I was a hockey player. I had the helmet. I had the equipment.
I was going to say, where would you have gotten the gear?
Exactly. So I don't think I get points for creativity, but I think I played the part well.
Yeah, plus the great thing is if somebody gives you like the little candy bars, that's the big one, you just check them right into their own bushes outside.
Hey, saying. Maybe that happened. You never know.
You never know. You don't have to admit it. Have a great time tonight. Thanks, man.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Take care.
There you go. Stan Bowman from your Chicago Blackhawks. Who, by the way, told me off the air a second ago he cut me.
I don't think he did. I think you did.
Actually, he told me I wasn't even on the roster.
Yeah.
We got a really cool thing coming up. We told you about it a little bit earlier, but Elliot Fromm's in the studio. We'll tell you why coming up here in a few minutes.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Welcome back. Your dreams were your ticket.
Hawks back tonight at the Madhouse on Madison. Oh, by the way, Dave's mentioned this a couple times this morning, but the Chicago Blackhawks' new community rink will be named the MB Ice Arena. 125,000 square foot community rink. Where is it now?
It's right by the United Center. It's just to the, what would it be, the south, I believe.
So you bring your skates to the game?
I wouldn't bring them tonight. No, it won't open until next month.
It's going to be a ton of fun and a great thing for that part of town, too. Mm-hmm. So well done by the Blackhawks, as usual. At 9:15, our friend Elliot Fromm is here. I see Elliot probably six times a year. Every couple of months, he's given away more of his incredible artwork. And I talk to Elliot, and I go, Elliot, come here. And I smack him in the head. And I go, you can't give it all away. Sell some of it. Go to artbeatlive.com and take a look at some of the work that Elliot has done through the years and continues to do. I know you're great partners with the Blackhawks. And the Indian head is such an iconic symbol. It's got to be fun to paint. I don't have a clue how you do it, but it's got to be fun.
Oh, it's incredible. You know, I'm celebrating 7 years now painting with the Hawks, and grateful for WGN Radio. Jackie Paulus first brought me on to the radio station. And in 2010, we had the playoff bash
right outside here.
And that's how I got connected with the Hawks. Tell you the truth, and I told Rocky this that year, that I never watched one game.
Yeah, you weren't a hockey guy,
No, not at all.
Yeah, and now you're hooked.
Oh, I'm hooked.
You were watching a Penguins game last night.
I was watching the Penguins game, yeah.
Well, that's the thing. Once you get it, you got it.
It's
fast.
It's awesome.
Yeah, and it really is incredible. Speaking of fast, you've seen Elliot work, right?
Oh, my God. Yes.
Takes you how long to do a canvas the size of the one we're about to give away, and how big is that canvas?
Well, the Hawks painting is 4 feet by 5 feet, and that one, it's about a 6.5-minute, 7-minute painting.
Six minutes.
Not all my paintings are that fast.
Is it still so cool? I mean, when you first kind of came on the scene, we first started having you on, and you would do paintings outside the showcase studio. People are like, oh, wait, what is it? Oh, it's a Blackhawk. Now they know what it's going to be, and they still are just as excited as, maybe more excited than before.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. They know what's coming.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you make the Indian head appear.
Yeah.
Elliot, I first met Elliot when he did Dogs Playing Foosball. Which was great. That was one of your finest works.
Yeah. I have that in my family room.
Yes, you did for quite some time. So if I go to Artbeat Live, is it all your stuff, or do you bring other artists in as well?
Yeah, so artbeatlive.com is my work. But you know what? I've been performing for 10 years, and I've made my money through charity and auctioning off my paintings. That's how I make my money. And so I figured I have my Artbeat Gallery in Buffalo Grove, and I've been sitting on that space for 2 years and trying to figure out what to do with it. So I finally came to the conclusion, starting October 17th, every single Tuesday night, my artwork, along with other local emerging artists, will be up for auction by silent bid.
How cool is that?
It's really cool. You can text ARTBEAT to 855-735-2437, and you'll get a link back, and you'll be able to go on. You can browse the artwork every Tuesday night. Anywhere you are.
Well, what if you're an artist and you want to get a hold of you? Is that a good way to do it as well?
You can get a hold of me at artbeatgallery.rocks.
Okay.
Go on that site.
Now, what is the artist community like? Because everybody knows you, but the non-celebrity artists, do they reach out to you?
Yeah. You know what? The art community is really weird. I kind of stay in my own community myself.
Right.
And
so you're saying artists are weird.
Artists are strange. And you know what? I think it's time to shake up the art community, because I think the artists, and I didn't even learn this as an artist being young. You know, you're brought up to be an artist and you want to sell your art for thousands and hundreds of thousands
and
of
millions.
Dollars. And you know, just like a pro athlete, it's one in a million shot.
Yeah.
And same as, I think you have a better chance of a musician making money than an artist. And pricing your artwork is very key. And I've learned, as you know, because we do a lot of charity events, how much money people actually have. And what they're willing to give.
And what's interesting, too, is, you know, it's great exposure, obviously. But I see people come up to you all the time after the painting's done, even if they didn't win it with the highest bid. Is that when you get asked to do work for them?
Yeah. I mean, we get calls all the time after the show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and he's trying to play it off that he's not that generous. He is that generous because he's out there and he's doing it all the time. And if a little business comes my way, hey, okay. Comes my way.
Yeah, like after the show today, I got to run over to Scott Joplin Elementary School on the south side on the 79th. We're doing a mural with Live Art International and another artist, Patrick Scoff, and we're doing a mural in their music room, you know, getting that going for them because they lost their music program.
Yeah, no, that sounds fantastic, too. I haven't thought about that. Has anybody asked you to do a wall, like in a high-end high-rise downtown?
No.
Because that would be cool.
Yeah.
Mural is not my specialty, but I can take a dab at it, you know.
How old were you when you knew you were good?
I did my first painting at 5 years old. It was a boxing kangaroo.
I believe you're...
<That's> cool. I still remember it.
Dave has that hanging in his family room, too. Yeah.
I believe you're born to be an artist, but you can be better. You can learn technique and things. But I don't think if you don't have that makeup, if you don't have that part of your brain, I don't think it's something you can do well. Like, I could draw stick figures, really cool stick figures, and then I'm out. But, you know, I have my own different form of creativity, like doing this. So do you know anybody that's been taught how to be an artist?
No, not at all. Yeah, you're born with it. My father was an artist. He was an amazing artist. You know, and I learned stories about him.
Is it genetic? Has that ever been tested?
So. It's in you.
I don't know how you could test it.
I think the more you practice, the better you get at certain things. Like, I'm a colorist. You know, I'm not that great at doing portrait work. That's why in the last 2 years I developed photographic painting, which I'll do another one tonight at the United Center for the game day.
Okay.
So I combine photography and painting and use my style over photography to really... actually, fans love it when I do portrait work of the hockey players. You know, you keep their look in that portrait.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Like, for example, Patrick Sharp. Using it as an example.
Do you have a photographic memory?
No. God, no.
The reason I ask is because when you see images, like you see an image that sticks with you, can you paint it without having it sitting in front of you?
I can. Well, I put my style to it, and that's probably as you get older as an artist, you have your style.
Okay.
So I'll do my style of that. Yeah.
Well, you're nice enough to bring this in. We have an Elliot Fromm Indian Head original. And by the way, I mean original when I say this. I don't think everybody understands this. These are copies. You know, you make these, and they're all a little different.
Every
one. Because they're
different.
Made, you know, in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Sandberg.
And if we, Elliot could give us the size and let the listeners know that want to win it, that they have to pick it up.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We can't fit this in an envelope.
No.
Yes.
It's 48 inches wide by 60 inches long. So if you can put a piece of plywood in your van or truck, you'll fit this
there
in
you
there.
Go.
Yeah, it's amazing. And you would be honored to have this and show it off all season long and
beyond.
You're lucky
it won't fit in my car because I would be at the door with that.
Yeah. So I thought we'd do something simple. So if everyone would bring their own original artwork down for Elliot to judge over the next 6 months, then we'll pick a winner. No, that's not what we're doing. We're going to do the seventh caller. We're going to do the seventh caller. That's it. Seventh caller that wants this. I know, Dave, I know you're saying, come on, man. But I want everybody to have a chance.
No, I think that's fair. I have no problem with that.
You were judging me. Seventh caller.
Well, it's
oh, not
as
about
usual.
This?
No.
Oh, okay.
No,
was something else you were judging me about? 312-981-7200. Seventh caller. We'll get one of these incredible Elliot Fromm pieces of original art, the Indian Head, and go to Art Beat Live. But mention again the original artist thing that you're doing.
On October 17th, every single Tuesday night, starting October 17th, you can text the word Art Beat to 855-735-2437. All the artwork every Tuesday night will be available for silent bid on your phone, on your computer, anywhere you are that night. You can text a bid for artwork items, starting at low as 75 and going up to I got a signed Duncan Keith painting starting at 1500.
Yeah.
So that's pretty worth it.
Which is a steal still.
Which is a steal.
By the way, you know, we're on CLTV now and Rick from Oak Park just won it. Just won the pen. That simple. Congratulations, Rick. You're going to love it. But we're on CLTV now. And I mentioned when I take my Hawks hat off, You and I are charter members of the Bald Guy Club.
There we go.
But when I take my Hawks head off, we were talking about this. There's a lot of marketing space here and up here and back here. So we have cameras here, here, and here. So I thought, you know, instead of a faux digital billboard, we could do three signs promoting the show or sell it to clients. And then I would just tilt my head three different times every 10 seconds or so and we'd have it. But what if Elliot did an original on top of my head?
Oh, that'd be so cool.
Or on my forehead.
That would be cool.
Right?
You mean like a mini version?
I don't know. Is it the same size as that? My forehead's pretty large.
Actually, yes. Come to think of it, it's not that mini.
So I will have to go into negotiations. Nice. But have you ever worked in forehead? I don't know if that's a medium you've worked in before.
No. Okay. We can do body painting. We'll be fine.
As long as we just leave it to here. Great to see you, man.
You too.
Yeah, I appreciate the friendship, and you know what a fan I am of your work.
And everybody catch me tonight. I'll be performing at the opening day.
Yes. Where are you going to be tonight?
Well, weather depending, if it does not rain later, they're making the call at about 2 o'clock, I will be in the new atrium.
Ah, very cool. Oh, the new building.
Yeah. We'll do that. If it does rain, I think they're pulling the red carpet through the atrium.
That's cool. I'm waiting
for the 2 o'clock call.
That's tremendous. Yeah. Good to see you. Thanks again. Thanks for that, and congrats to our winner. Welcome back. This is the Allstate Showcase Studio, Steve Cochran Show number 1003. The fortunate thing about our friends at CLTV and what we do here on 720 WGN every morning is it gives us a little room to stretch in this 9 o'clock hour, and we can talk about really important causes. And one of the things we know painfully as much as anything else is for all the conditions we do know and the conditions that we fund, there are literally thousands of conditions that are underfunded, that aren't understood, and need research and testing and more. It brings us to the story of Ellen and Bob. And let me start with you, Sean. Who was Ellen?
Ellen was my mom.
And she passed when?
7 years ago in March.
Conditions called retinal vasculopathy with cerebral leukodystrophy. Is that close?
Yeah, right. It essentially means the deterioration of the small blood vessels in your body. But you notice it the most in your brain and in your eyes.
And very rare.
Very rare.
Very rare. And this is a woman who was nothing but healthy.
Nothing but healthy.
Mom and a grandma.
Great fit. Yep.
And she got sick and fought it like doctors didn't believe.
Exactly right.
So when she passed, when did you decide a great legacy would be to try to raise money for this type of thing?
Well, we were beginning to raise money as she got sick and finding the right researchers all around the world, which turned out to be in St. Louis, where we lived at the time.
Great medical facilities in St. Louis.
Yeah, at Washington University.
Yeah, sure.
And so we began fundraising the research, and in that time we discovered the specific gene, and since then we've been able to find more patients who are suffering from this and have it in their family line. When we found the gene, we found other labs that were studying that gene in Dallas and at the NIH. And so we've been able to, we've been very lucky to have the wherewithal and the network to fundraise and create a focus around the disease. And then after my mom passed, my dad moved to Chicago and found a home here and quickly got connected with Redmond. And Redmond became this experience, and a family for us in the arts community in Chicago. And I got really engaged to help bring more young people to show them that kind of art experience.
And it grows upon itself that way.
Right, exactly. And so when Red Moon was no longer... Now Cabinet of Curiosity. I thought there was an opportunity to create an experience like that also fundraised for what was really important to my family.
And it leads to a big Halloween event we're going to tell you about, but introduce our guest here as well.
I'm here with Frank Mugeri, Cabinet of Curiosity.
And I would
and
not,
a lifetime theater guy, right?
A lifetime theater guy, yeah. Coming up on 30 years. Thanks for dating me.
we were friends until then.
Cabinet of Curiosity events is not a replication of Red Moon by any means. Now, my aesthetic personality was obviously, because I was there for 25 years, woven deeply into the experience of Red Moon. But Cabinet really is serving two very different purposes. One, to develop very intimate, engaged, interactive experiences in the theater and outside of the theater, as well as ritual experiences that are modern, new, unique, and innovative, and consulting on events like Sean's to develop environment and experience that's really exciting and unusual for people.
So with an arts community as vibrant as Chicago's, there is no shortage of creativity, I'm sure, that have folks have great ideas. And your job then is to go out and help them showcase what their creativity is, maybe fine-tune it a bit and make it work for the event they're doing?
Not necessarily.
Oh, I thought I was so close.
You're doing well, though. Thanks for working so hard.
Playing your game.
The way that I see Cabinet is that I curate both myself and other artists' work into a frame that serves some sort of spiritual or faith-based expression for audience members.
So what's happening on Halloween?
Yeah, so we've actually, Frank wasn't quite ready to work with us last year, so he connected me with two incredible people, Carrie Kennedy, who's the executive producer and creative director of Chicago Ideas Week,
okay,
and Donna Sue Van Cleef.
Yeah, we know Carrie.
Yeah, Carrie's great.
Yeah.
And Donna Sue Van Cleef, who works with Jam to produce Chicago Gourmet, another incredible person. And the two of them plus me worked with 13 different artists last year to create this other world kind of Halloween event. The only thing about Halloween is that it's a costume party. It's really a light art based sort of immersive experience that was inspired by everything that Frank did with Red Moon. And now Frank's with us and putting his own fingerprint on it.
So, and Frank, it sounds like you've really got to be there to understand it. In the process of being there, you're also going to help this cause tremendously.
I think that's really true. And it's an experiential event. So it's designed to be, you know, both intimate and engaging, and that it's not like a gala or it's not a theater experience. Really, you are living within the immersive environment that is defined by illumination and light experiences that are exotic surprising that will really capture audiences' imaginations in ways that I expect will have not been captured prior.
Age appropriate for everybody?
Absolutely. So there's two parts. There's the dinner part from 7:30 to 9:30 and probably an average age of 50 or so, and those people stay as long as they can or want
they
to.
They can stay awake.
and then after all,
they're 50.
We could build a bedroom for them somewhere.
Yeah, right.
Like a little napping
hotel.
Quarters.
Yes. We're still planning. And at 9:30, we have a lower ticket price that just becomes a late night sort of party that takes place in the same space.
Cool.
And our hope is to, as Sean you know, is really aware of and very smart about, is to capture the audience and experience that was Bone Shaker, which was Red Moon's Halloween party for 9 years.
Yeah.
And to kind of return them now into a really different circumstance. And by that, I mean, Bone Shaker was a party for Red Moon that created revenue for the institution at large, but he's generously, and I think with a really good service mind, you know, it's now using this as a way to raise money for this particular disease that very few people are looking at or understanding in any manner.
I get a good vibe from you in
but
the way.
Not Sean.
But no, Sean, I've never liked. No, but I get a good vibe from you and that you got a big heart and you want to do this. But you were very honest off the air talking about a medical struggle that you're going through now. Does that drive you more towards this, or were you involved prior to?
Well, I think the universe is uncanny.
Uh-huh.
Unquestionably. And Sean is right. Last year when we started talking about this party, I was not prepared to do that because I took a position at Chicago Children's Theater as their education and community artistic director, of which I've had incredible success with and continue to devote myself quite fully to that institution. And last year was really a time for me just to do that.
Focus.
I needed to succeed there after the demise of Red Moon. And then this year, more uncanny is that, yes, I was recently diagnosed with what's called primary central nervous system vasculitis, which is something 1 in 2 million people get.
Not 1 to 2 million, 1 in 2 million, and it may soon be 1 in 3 million when they redo the math.
Yeah, and at one point we even thought maybe what I had was what Sean's mother had,
right,
just for a few days.
The symptoms are incredibly similar.
They are incredibly similar.
Rare. Yeah.
But the big piece of the thing that I'll try to weave together here is that my mission with Cabinet of Curiosity Events is really service-based. It's a non-for-profit entity that's attempting to create ritual and personal experiences for people that have greater service output, meaning I want to help people.
Yeah.
And this event perfectly fits with that. And it perfectly fits with my crisis right now, which is this medical condition that's unusual and not well defined. And it does feel like this is the perfect way for me to give back and participate in the solution versus living in the problem of medical crisis.
And the foundation is called?
The Clayco Foundation.
The Clayco Foundation.
Which supports a couple of our own initiatives. One is this, and we've struck a deal with Washington University that has very low overhead, so all of the proceeds that come through the Clayco Foundation through Illumination have, you know, only a 5% fee that the hospital charges, and the rest goes directly to research. And the other one's called a Clayco Career Development Initiative, where we help young kids in, you know, less than ideal high schools in St. Louis right now, bringing it to Chicago, learn trades, electricians, carpentry,
fabulous, things like that. So, what is the website for the foundation?
Well, the website for the event is illuminatechicago.com.
Okay.
And the foundation you can get to through claycorp.com.
Claycorp.com. And I'm sure you're linked back and forth on both.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We need to do this.
Oh, it looks cool.
Halloween party?
Yeah, it looks fabulous. Yeah, it does look fabulous. And, you know, and just reading the notes on your mom, she sounds like somebody I wished I'd known.
Thank you.
She had that sort of effect on people?
Oh, yeah. People still today talk about how much they love her. I meet people that I've never met who the first thing they say is, I loved your mom.
I just want to read this paragraph. I don't know if you wrote it, whoever did, but I think it's a really sweet tribute. Ellen and Bob started dating when they were 15, married for 25 years with 5 kids and 3 grandchildren. They had an extraordinary run. The relationship was full of ups and downs, strengths and weaknesses, heartache, tragedy, and blessings beyond their young and wild dreams. Ellen was a passionate person, defined purely by the fierce motherhood and giving spirit that she owned. She cared about everyone she met and made no foes along her journey. Doesn't that sound like somebody you wish you knew?
Absolutely.
Like we missed out.
Absolutely. She's a great mom.
Yeah, so you were lucky to have her in your life, obviously. Oh, yeah. I don't know what to say to you, Frank, other than I wish you well and God bless you, because
thanks.
What you're going through and devoting the energy to this, you deserve all the credit in the world, but I hope we can help you build Cabinet of Curiosity as time goes on, too.
I think everything's going to be okay.
Yeah, so do I.
And you know,
plus, you're making that hat work, man.
Yeah. Yeah. The one thing that I would, for myself, end with, and what really inspired me by Sean's ideas this particular year for Illumination was this notion he had of, I want to develop a playground of light. And interestingly, the beautiful tribute that you just wrote about his mother and his father,
yeah,
is, you know, it's really powerful, but it's sad and relatively mournful. But the way that Sean has approached his event is the opposite. It's really celebratory. And the idea of a playground of light, of which, you know, he's imagined a number of new pieces of equipment and physical experiences that guests get to interact
that's
with
really
while
cool
they're
visual
there, is incredibly exciting. And just the words playground of light, I think,
yeah, it works,
brings tremendous hope to the world that we live in right now. And the event is as much about hope and redemption as it is anything else.
And boy, don't we need it now.
For sure.
Absolutely.
All right. So for tickets to the event, where do we go again?
IlluminateChicago.com has links to the tickets and a way to donate as well if you don't want to come to the event.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you.
My best to your family. And Frank, good luck in the fight.
Thank you, sir.
I think you're going to be just fine, too. Roz, thanks. You should have come on the air. It's 9:54. Bill and Wendy coming up on 720 WGN.